Welcome. This is Hear Us Roar, a podcast where we talk with women writers about both their debut novels and their journey to publication. Our thanks go out to the Women's Fiction Writers Association for their support of this podcast. WFWA is a volunteer-run organization dedicated to providing a community for career-focused women fiction writers via networking, education, and continuing support of their career growth. If you'd like to learn more or to join WFWA, visit womensfictionwriters.org. I'm your host, Maggie Smith. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. Our guest today is Lorelei Brush, and her book is called Uncovering. It was published in July of 2019 by Mascot Books. Welcome to the podcast, Lorelei.
Thank you.
And we generally like to start with you telling us a little bit about the book. So I'll turn it over to you for that.
Okay. Well, Shanaz is a 23-year-old Pakistani Muslim, and she's a nurse practitioner who has a passion about mothers delivering healthy babies and throughout their pregnancy being healthy. And she's working in the northwest of Pakistan and doing well until her father says it's time to get married. They do choose a husband for her, her parents choose a husband for her who believes in her work, and the family seems to accept that, which is rare in Pakistan. Everything goes well. She falls in love with her husband, and then her father-in-law dies. And upon that occurring, the eldest son in the family is in charge. And Raja Haider has a very different set of beliefs, a very conservative set of Muslim beliefs. And things start going badly almost immediately. He says, you can't work anymore, and she rebels. And the story is really what happens when someone is trying to do what is her passion in work and also be a part of the family that she's just married into. Sometimes she can be a good diplomat, and sometimes not.
And is this a journey that she goes through where we don't want to have you tell us the end because we want people to buy the book, but is she changing as well as her circumstances changing?
She starts out very much as a coming across as a pushy young woman, and she needs to learn to moderate what her own passion is about, to be able to do this balancing act between being a wife, a sister-in-law, a daughter-in-law with a new family, and following her own personal passions.
Learn about yourself while you were writing this book.
Well, the good thing I learned about myself really is I love writing dialogue. I sit in a coffee shop, and there's a big fireplace upstairs and club chairs around the fireplace. So I would sit in the fireplace and I could see these scenes occurring. And I got to play in my own mind each of the roles in the scene. And it turns out I really like writing dialogue.
And how long have you been writing? I mean, you sound like this was a new discovery. Have you not been writing very long?
Well, I probably have written thousands of pages of government reports.
Okay.
So I've been writing a lot.
But not a lot of dialogue.
It wasn't until I retired from my international development job that I actually started writing fiction. So
okay.
It was a new discovery. Now, that started about 10 years ago, so it's not yesterday that I discovered this, but it's after retirement.
Okay, and this is your debut novel, but what have you been doing for the 10 years, writing this one novel, or did you write some others that are in the drawer?
I have three that I have finished, and the second one has been accepted for publication, probably come out later to 2020, and I've been pitching the third one.
So okay.
I'm moving along in this career.
I'll see. Say. So is your second one going to be published by your same publisher, and then you're querying the third one, or?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, our audience can't see you, but you don't look like you're Pakistani. So I'm going to ask you how you knew about all of this, which is occurring in another country, another culture, different traditions. There's obviously either some extensive research or you did this with your job or something.
You hit the nail on the head with the did this with your job. And from 2006 to 2008, I directed a project that was in this northwest Pakistan area. And the project was to train 10,000 teachers in state-of-the-art instructional techniques in the sciences, mathematics, and English. And in the midst of all of that, I had a staff of about 260 Pakistanis, and we worked together intimately and extensively over a two-year period to get this project going. And I was very struck by the issues that the women on my staff had. Many of them, most of them were married. And they were issues that made me ask myself, how does a woman negotiate this society in order to be able to do a job, have a job, earn money, and also have this multi-generational family situation?
And did you get to know some of these people fairly intimately, where you were able to go into their homes and see the family interactions?
Exactly.
And you were there for 2 years?
Right.
Okay. What did you think would be interesting to an American audience about this? Because this is obviously a very different kind of hierarchy of kind of a patriarchal family situation.
I think most of my sort of more academic and research-oriented career was placing me in the middle, needing to explain a culture to another group of people, to a group of Americans, where I had some familiarity with it and the Americans did not. I felt the same way in this novel, that I really felt connected to the people that I worked with in Pakistan, but I really wanted Americans to understand what it felt like to be in another culture, in this particular culture, and to observe what was going on, but always through an American lens. It's like that introduction where you don't have to dive right in, where you don't really understand the culture, but you have somebody diving for you who's doing the explaining from an American perspective of what this is about.
While you were there, were you feeling like, I want to write about this someday? Or were you just doing it and then later said, hey, that would make a novel?
As I was going through a lot of the sort of now parts of history, parts of this, what is explained in the book, actually as the affair with the Red Mosque in Islamabad, my office was about a block away from the mosque, and every day I had to commute past and watch what was going on. And I kept saying to myself, somebody ought to write about this. And when I got home, I thought, why don't you? I mean, this is just do it. So.
So they didn't know you were writing a novel?
No.
How many different kinds of times did you stop and say, oh my gosh, I could never live under this, or I could never live in this culture? Or did you feel like you could understand what that would be like and maybe adjust?
I guess it's sort of in the middle of this. I felt like I understood, but I didn't think I could ever live there.
Okay.
Now, I lived there perfectly comfortably when I was in charge. And all of the men on my staff knew who was in charge, and they grew to be comfortable with it, I should say. And that was wonderful for me. For instance, in Pakistan, sexual harassment is simply not something that anyone ever criticizes a male for. Well, I was real clear on that. It was not going to happen on my staff. So,
mm-hmm.
So there were definitely American things that were a part of the project, which otherwise these people would not probably have experienced.
So that's interesting. They were able to relate to you on a equal basis, even though they might not treat the women in their family on an equal basis.
Exactly.
Amazing how people can adjust their expectations.
I think part of it was that I was older than most of them, and there is a real respect for age, and that helped. And that since family was not allowed, I was there on my own. And I have to say that one of the things that was true throughout the time I was there was virtually every day, someone would come up to me and say, thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for doing this work. And it felt wonderful, obviously. Nobody does that with writers.
And you were there under the auspices of our government?
Yes, this was a USAID-funded project, and I work for an independent consulting company that won the contract.
Okay. Ever want to go back?
Yeah. It's very hard to get a visa.
Okay.
I mean, I've tried to work as a consultant, and those things are, those assignments are hard to get as well. But yes, I'd love to go back.
And is your book written in first person from the woman's point of view, or are there various points of view in the book?
There's only the one point of view. It's a third person close, and okay. It's of the young woman.
Okay. All right. And do you have a lot of interior dialogue then with her as well, interior thoughts where you're letting us into her thinking about it?
I'm focused on the word a lot, but it's definitely a third person.
So. Okay. How long, you said you had three books and you've been writing for about 10 years, you said. How long did this particular one take you to write, or were you working on all three of them at one time?
No, this one was probably about 2 years.
Okay.
And I then started the process of seeing how it was going to get published. And I went to, when I was in Pakistan, I was connected with a senior editor at HarperCollins Australia, who said, wow, we really need this book. We'd really like to publish this book. And when I sent it to her, she said, it is wonderful. I'm going to put it through the process. We'll see what happens. And it got to the very last meeting of the editorial group, and they had two books that were set in Pakistan, and they decided they only needed one. Fine. And then when I came to this country, I talked to an agent who was very excited about it, and she held on to the book and gave me great feedback for about 8 or 9 months, and said in the end, but I don't know who I would sell it to. It's like, and in her explanation, it's like, you are an American speaking English, and you're white, and you're talking about people in another country who are speaking Urdu, who are Muslim. Oh, the Christian was in there too. And she said, editors don't like people who are entering that different area when they write books. And then I sent it to approximately 200 other agents querying, and I spent a lot of time pitching at conferences and so on. And I was getting this steady stream of, you know, I'm sorry, but you're just not the right person for this book. And in the end, that's why I chose to go with a hybrid publisher.
I gotcha.
I'm sorry, actually, that I didn't choose earlier, because this could have been out, you know,
right,
6 years ago.
Right, yeah. That's the frustrating part. Before we get into a lot of, you know, how you write, and you've told us a little bit about how you got published, but I want to give you a chance to read from your book so people can get a feel for the narrative. So I'll turn that over to you.
Okay.
And you can set the stage if you need a little bit to give us some context of it.
This is at the beginning of the book, where we're talking about Shanaz, and she has heard from her father that it's time, from her parents' point of view, that she married. She sighed and leaned her head against the door jamb. Why couldn't her father understand that her passion was making sure Kashmiri children were born healthy? There was none left for marriage. It was so unfair. He'd raised her like a son, encouraged her to ask questions, taught her to negotiate for privileges, and bragged to his friends when her grades topped the class, until she was 12 and her brother Tahir was born. Then the world revolved around a different son.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Now, does she have training? Has she? She's not a medical doctor, right? She's.
No. She has a master's degree.
Okay.
And it's in public health.
Okay.
But she is trained as a nurse practitioner.
Okay, like we would think of there. And she wants to keep doing that, and she's allowed to keep doing that for a while.
Right.
What has been the most rewarding part of writing this?
I think getting lost in two things, maybe. First, getting lost in the fantasy about what this story was going to be about, and having the characters guide me along the way. And then the second is, I love to give talks, and just standing up in front of a bunch of people and being able to talk about something that I enjoy and proud of and so on. That's been wonderful. And I give talks at churches, for instance, who are interested in Islam, and the slide from conservative Islam into fundamentalism. I give talks to health professionals, because a lot of this book is talking about the people that Shanaz helps along the way, and then also to people in education, because the project specifically I was working on was in education, and I can talk about its relationship to the health community and what was going on in that area too.
So that's an interesting, rather than a typical publicity campaign, like you might be going out there and getting book reviewers and all your friends to buy your book and whatever. It sounds like you're really almost more like a nonfiction person might be, which is that you're trying to go to audiences that would be interested in, not necessarily this as a fiction book, but more the reality behind it.
Right.
And that's very interesting. So you've been doing this even, I gather, before the book came out, because it hasn't been out that long. So you've been doing it for a while.
Right.
And you live in what area of the country?
I live in Northern Virginia near Washington, D.C.
Okay, so there's a lot of different places you can go that are within driving distance that you... And have you been working with any kind of publicity person, or are you doing all of your own?
Well, I've worked with Mascot's publicity person.
Okay.
But I have to say that I've been more successful than she has at finding places to give talks.
Were presentations something you also did in your job when you were working for the government?
I certainly did a lot of presentations.
Sure.
I have a Doctor of Ministry degree as well, and it has pleased me through many years to stand up in front of a congregation and speak to about what is possible.
Okay.
And so part of my degree dealt with Islam, and part of it with Christianity, part of it with Hinduism and so forth. So
this must be a very interesting time in the world for you to live in.
Oh, yes.
You sound like you see it from a lot of different viewpoints.
Right. One small occurrence when I was over there, and that is that the Taliban was not happy because I was dealing in education for girls as well as education for boys. And I did get a death threat, which changed the sort of nature of what I thought I was doing over there. So part of my training sessions for teachers some of those training sessions were held in Abbottabad, which is mispronounced by many Americans as Abbottabad, which is where Osama bin Laden was found. And my office manager for the Abbottabad office was, it turns out, two or three blocks from Osama bin Laden's compound.
So you were right in the middle of things.
Yes, definitely.
Does your life in Virginia seem very tame?
Absolutely, yes.
Are the kinds of programs that you were participating in still going on, or have they been cut?
Well, as with so many USAID-funded projects, there is a beginning point and there is an end point. And while we did train 10,000 teachers, it's also true in Pakistan that all of the education hierarchy within the ministry leaves office when there is a new group of people elected, and then a new group are put in place. So all of the inspectors, all of the people who went to visit schools are now different from the ones that we trained and worked with. Now, I hope some of the teachers are still using the techniques we talked about, but I don't know.
You don't stay in touch with anyone over there?
Not among the teachers. I do among those who are my staff. But they often have moved on to other projects that may not even be in the same part of the country. So I don't know for sure what has...
And I guess that's not that much different from our government. You know, we elect a new president and we get a whole new set of people running the different agencies. So I guess that's really not that different. You talked about querying 200 agents. I wasn't even sure there were that many out there. That took you a while? How long?
Yes. I do a bunch, and then I follow up with that, and then nothing would happen, or they'd all say not for me or wouldn't answer, and then I do another bunch, and then I go to a conference and get another idea about people that I might find. Yes.
Did you, while you were writing it, I mean, you hadn't written books before 10 years ago.
Right.
Did you go to conferences, read books, take instruction, take workshops? I mean, how did you even learn to write fiction?
I started with a woman here who has done a lot of writing, and there's a a writer's center in Washington, D.C. that gives lots of courses. And I took several courses there in writing your first novel. And then this woman, who also teaches at the writer's center, was offering a course which is finish your novel. So it started in September and it ended in July. And the push was for everybody in that group, and there were six or seven of us, would actually finish the novel by the end of the year. And most of us did. So it was a draft. It was the first way through. But it was what I did the year I came back from Pakistan to really get my writing off the ground.
Okay.
She was very good.
And then after you'd written the first draft, did you hire anyone to do developmental editing, or did you belong to a critique group that other eyes on your manuscript?
Many. So I have two critique groups, and then I'm trying to think if I actually, and I had a developmental editor, and the developmental editor, yeah, the editor went through everything with me once, and then I rewrote, and then she went through it again. And the second time, bless her heart, she said, "Don't change a word." That's what a writer wants to hear. So.
Yeah. So it sounds like it was very much of a great book, well-written, well-researched, but just hard to place.
Hard to place.
Yeah. In essence, the publisher you're with, you used the word hybrid. Does that mean part of it you paid for and part of it they paid for, or that kind of thing? Okay. For a higher royalty? Yeah. Okay. Were you pleased with that relationship? Did that seem to work out well? You're pleased with the book and the cover and the editing and all that?
Well, I love the cover, and I just was so, I had some ideas, but one of the things that's wonderful about Mascot is how much they're willing to work with an author. So it isn't that somebody says, "You must do." It's, "What do you think about this?" And I just was immensely pleased with the cover, with the font that they chose, with the little decoration that comes between scenes, all of that, and how much they felt that it was important that I was a part of it just as much as they were a part of it. The editorial, the acquisitions process, the editorial projects, the process, proofreading, the printing, all of that was terrific.
How did you find your way to them? Did you just research hybrid presses and small presses and...
Well, this was part of a months, if not years-long phenomenon of going to a bunch of talks. And the publisher, the person who's the, I don't know what he is, editor-in-chief publisher, who's in charge of Mascot Books, was giving a talk. And I went up to him after the talk and said, "This is very interesting." And they are located, about a 20-minute drive from me. So I also spent some time at the office looking at options and cover options and so on. That was terrific. But he said, "Well, you should send your book to our acquisitions editor," which I did. And they loved it.
Let's go back a little bit and have you tell me, did you plot this all out? Are you a plotter? Or did you just let it flow while you were writing? Did you know where you were going?
I knew what the historical events were going to be that I was following. And I knew basically how I wanted this family to be involved in these events. But I can't call myself a plotter because I'm not big on outlines. I heard Jeffrey Archer talk, and he talked about an outline, and he keeps enhancing the outline until his outline's like 180 pages long. And then it's really easy to write because he's just sort of filling in a sentence here and there. I could not do that. Enjoy so much more the scenes unfolding in my head, and I know where I want to end up, but getting there is always, ooh, what's going to happen here? And I like the excitement, the interest, the personal connection in that.
You almost sound like you're, see it cinematically. You talked about, you know,
absolutely.
I'm seeing the characters talking and that kind of thing, which is a very common thing that writers say.
I have a terrible time with endings. Wrote five different endings for this book easily, if not more, because there's always this question of what strings are you going to tie up at the end? What are you going to leave a little bit open? You know, is somebody going to die, or is somebody going to be rehabilitated, or is somebody going to... So I tried them all and then came up with this one, which I like much better than the rest.
What do you do besides writing?
way of being retired is, you know, I get up in the morning and I read the Washington Post, which I love doing, and then I go exercise. So I love to hike, and I am out 3 days a week for an hour and a half, and then I go to the gym 3 days a week, and I have a little program of exercise there. So I start my writing day mid-morning-ish. And then at the end of the day, I tend to run family errands, that kind of thing. There's always a chunk of writing, and I'm usually writing at a coffee shop. And then what I wrote this all longhand, this particular book. I come home and then put things in the computer, and it ends up being an editing job as I'm actually entering in the computer. And then the next day, I'll read what I wrote the day before and write the next scene, kind of thing. But I can't leave until I have 5 pages written.
Oh, that's your goal. And I'm sure you get asked this question at the presentations you do a lot. Where do your ideas come from? Do you have too many to even begin to write them all down, or do you sometimes struggle with that?
No, I haven't struggled with that, actually. It's generally been some issue or some set of people in my life where I feel like I don't understand how this could work itself out, or I don't get worked out and I'm going to have it go another way. But my second book is reflecting on my father. My third book is reflecting on my husband and me. And my fourth book is about my mother's family. So now, about is a very, I want to say that in a very vague way. I got the idea from these people, but it's what I'm writing about is not a memoir. It is, in fact, a fictional event, a fictional story started by these events.
Sure. I mean, you can't divorce yourself from what you've experienced in your life. That's all you know. So now that we're at the end of the interview, I'm going to ask you the question we close out with, which is something quirky about you that you'd like to share.
Well, I have traveled on all 7 continents in this world.
Wow.
And when my son was 15, he said to me, "Mom, I've been on 6 continents. I'd really like to go to the 7th before I graduate from high school." So we did. And this is reflecting on myself. I hadn't been out of the country when I graduated from high school. And here is my son, who has been on all 7 continents.
And what was that continent?
Antarctica.
So you had been to Antarctica?
I have been, yes.
Wow. Okay. And what was that like? I don't know too many people that have been to Antarctica. I know nobody that's been to Antarctica, actually.
It was absolutely wonderful. I mean, we were there in over the Christmas break, Christmas and New Year's break. We were on a small ship of about 45 passengers, and we had a Swedish chef who made the most incredible meals. The problem being, you have to cross Drake's Passage, which is one of the worst for horrible storms in the world, and we hit a 4-7 gale, and there were only a few of us in the dining hall those days. But it was what my son and I both didn't have trouble with seasickness, which was you can sit in penguin colonies. You can simply sit there, and a penguin will hop right in front of you or hop into your lap. And we saw them laying eggs, the eggs breaking, the little penguin babies with their fluffiness. It was just miraculous, awesome, all of that.
I'm going to remember you as the author who a penguin sat in her lap. In fact, I think that's a good name for a book. Well, it was a joy talking to you, Lorelei, and I wish you luck on your other books that you appear to have already be in the process of publishing as well. So thank you very much. You've provided us with a lot to think about, and I'm sure your book would be interesting for people to read to get a sense of people that we need to know about, how they live and how their cultures differ from ours, but yet probably many of the same challenges. So thank you for being on the podcast.